Right to Try is federal law, thanks in part to Joe Donnelly. The NFL bans kneeling, and Mike Pence celebrates. That plus a pro-Obamacare group targets Indiana and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 25th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the House passed and the President pledged to sign the so-called Right to Try bill to help those suffering from serious medical conditions.
Right to Try lets terminally ill people use experimental medications that haven't yet received approval from the FDA. It's based in part on Indiana's Right to Try law, signed by then-Governor Mike Pence in 2015, and the federal version is named in part after a Hoosier, Jordan McLean, who has a form of muscular dystrophy. Indiana Democrat Joe Donnelly is one of the Senate sponsors of the bill. His co-author, Republican Senator Ron Johnson, called Donnelly a, quote, stalwart, and says the bill couldn't have become law without the Hoosier lawmaker.
How badly does this undercut a key message of Republicans who are challenging Joe Donnelly? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican John Hammond, John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, Mike Braun has cited Ron Johnson as one of the senators he thinks he would be able to work best with, one of his favorite senators in the Senate. Do you think that's still true after this week?
I think probably not. This just underscores how effective Joe Donnelly's been. I mean, he's not the high profile. We don't have the majority in the Senate, but he has been very effective both on co-sponsoring bills and working to get them passed and on amendments and on issues that are important to Hoosiers. This is a very forward-thinking piece of legislation, and for people with chronic illness and fatal illnesses, it gives them some hope to try these experimental treatments that aren't going to be approved for many years. So he deserves a lot of credit for that, and certainly Ron Johnson, Senator Johnson, gave it to him and said, but for Joe Donnelly, it probably wouldn't have passed. So I'm sure Mr. Braun has egg all over his face at the moment.
Yeah, do you think Mike Braun's a little frustrated with this one?
Oh, I don't think so, really. But I do agree that it's a great piece of legislation, and it's kind of groundbreaking. That model for it was here in Indiana, right, from then-Governor Pence, now Vice President Pence. So in many respects, Joe Donnelly and I think 16 other Democrats followed that lead of the Vice President's. I think we can say that pretty clearly. So I don't think it undercuts a message one way or the other. Actually, I think one of the things that with Joe Donnelly is that he's pretty selective about what he supports, what he doesn't. He's trying to gauge where he needs to be with the Hoosier culture here, right, with our electorate. And where I think he made a real tactical error, maybe a strategic error, and what he didn't support that the administration supported, as the administration supported this bill, was the tax reform and tax cut bill.
The tax cut for the rich bill, you mean?
The one that everybody here really thinks is strong.
And no,
I think, it'll turn out to be a serious mistake for him as the campaign unfolds.
I don't think everybody here thinks this by a long mean. They look at who benefits from it and they realize it's rich people like Donald Trump.
I want to ask about Right to Try at its core, though. We've talked a little bit about it on the show before, but this wasn't a unanimously supported bill, and that there's some patient advocacy groups who say you could already do the sorts of things that this bill would do, except that now the bill takes away more oversight. Is it a good bill? Putting you on the spot, John.
I would say, to the extent, and I'm going to repeat here, but it's worth repeating, to the extent that it gives people who might otherwise have no hope some reason to hold on, to continue to fight, and to exhaust all opportunities, That strikes me as a good, the maintenance of hope strikes me as a good, fundamentally good policy. There's a certain libertarian streak here that sort of runs throughout, that sort of comes up every once in a while on Capitol Hill and will seem to get people on both ends of the spectrum because some of that philosophy appeals on the left and the right. But I think John made a good point about the selectivity of Joe Donnelly's, the issues. If you look at the Senate, there are several senators and members of the House who have made it their career to find well, let's call them the red meat issues or the sort of the divisive issues. And then whether it's to be seen as the standard bearer out there fighting, you know, the good fight, or to really gin up fundraising, they go for that. If you look at what Joe Donnelly's done, it's about veterans, health care, and suicide among our members of our armed services and veterans of
opioids,
those conflicts.
Yeah.
It's about opioids. It's about this. And it's hard to say that these aren't universally supported issues. So there is, whether it's political calculation or not, it's a probably
sound
approach.
Well, this issue won't change the course of the election, that's for sure.
No.
But
neither will the tax.
But Republicans, one of their issues they tried to harp on Donnelly is, oh, he's never gotten a piece of legislation passed, which is now not true, and was true, but only in the technical sense before that. Did they have to abandon that strategy, or did he just surge on with it?
I'm afraid that they'll surge on with it in the sense that it doesn't seem to matter that most campaigns are not moored in any kind of a fundamental philosophical basis or even the facts when it comes to the super PACs. The super PACs ignore those kinds of things. You know, the Sleepin' Joe Donnelly nickname that came after the Mexican Joe or Mexico Joe nickname, that's continually being trotted out. They're going to try to make that stick. It's all about focus group politics. It's not about what is really going on the ground. And so that's where the battle is going to be, whether Joe Donnelly can get through and say that he is able to do these things, or whether the super PAC money, which is going to fly both ways, by the
Absolutely.
Way. We won't recognize Mike Braun by the time this is done either. So.
Well, or you might recognize Mike Braun, whose one piece of legislation when he was in the General Assembly was to give himself a tax break. You know, so you've got that. And by the way, his trucking businesses are all imported goods. So, I mean, the idea that he doesn't have some vulnerability on that issue is a little far-fetched.
You're going to find Mike Braun as a very credible candidate as an outsider, and it's going to be very difficult for someone inside the Congress, in the United States Senate, which has a very low approval rating, to be successful in this environment against Mike Braun.
We'll see.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: is getting right to try through Congress a significant political win for Joe Donnelly? A yes, B no, or C it won't have much impact. Last week's question: will Rod Bray as Senate President Pro Tem ideologically shift the Senate Republican caucus? 21% say yes, further to the right, 20% say yes towards the center, and 59% say no, it'll remain about the same. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, NFL owners this week voted, or maybe didn't, to bar players from kneeling during the national anthem next week, a decision Vice President Mike Pence hailed in a single-worded tweet.
Some NFL players began kneeling during the anthem a couple seasons ago to protest and shed light on racial inequality. Those protests came under fire from, among others, President Donald Trump. And last season, Mike Pence left a Colts game before it started because some players kneeled. Now NFL owners want to prevent players from kneeling during the anthem, requiring them to either stand or wait in the locker rooms. And Vice President Pence tweeted that news along with the word winning.
John Hammond, was this tweet a little juvenile from Mike Pence?
No, I'll tell you why. A vast majority of Americans support standing for the national anthem, respecting the flag. And I think the marketplace has also spoken to the NFL about how some people feel about that. And it's a private organization. It's made up of a group of private businesses, and they've decided to make a rule that probably matches where the culture is. I think one of the things you talk about sometimes is that somehow President Trump or Vice President Pence push the culture to a certain area. Actually, the culture is what it is. It's there. They are giving voice to it. And I think his quick tweet was to say, you know, that's where we are. That's where we are as a culture.
Yeah, where we are as a culture, giving voice to racism, giving a voice to hatred. That's what Donald Trump does. I mean, of course it's juvenile. I mean, what he's trying to do is emulate his hero, Donald Trump, and start tweeting out ridiculous little things. And we see where that gets him. When he opens his mouth on foreign policy, he's an embarrassment and called by the North Koreans, they said political dummy. you could probably expand that a little bit if you were uncharitable. But
she would never
do that.
They're not the most credible
but
source.
But he is not, apparently he was somebody, or at least the source and the regime was someone that Donald Trump was all prepared to cozy up to. And they have a lot in common. We've talked about that before, the hairdos, the liking parades, and all the rest of that stuff. So the problem with this is that he has been the sycophant-in chief. And anything Donald Trump does, he's in favor of. And, you know, I have a fundamental question we talked about a little bit before the show is why we are playing the national anthem at sporting events. I just don't, it just doesn't strike me. I mean,
In case the lightning comes down, I'm going to sit over here a little bit further. I don't want to be here when
it seems countercultural to me, too.
And I think you should stand for the national anthem. I don't know what football has to do with the national anthem.
Well, I don't have
I don't have the answer.
John, I wanted to ask this, though. It when I saw the tweet, it did remind me more of Donald Trump than it did of the Mike Pence that I'd covered for 5-plus years here in Indiana.
Right. Right.
Is his boss rubbing off a little bit on him?
I think so. I think if you look a few weeks ago at his comments about Joe Arpaio being a law-abiding champion of the Constitution and the rule of law, that's one instance. And then you have this other instance where if you take a look at this, and John, I'll acknowledge the culture seems to be where you say it is, but when you get right down to it, America is not its culture. It is its Constitution and its founding principles. And those respect a protest. Those principles allow for dissent. And when it gets squashed or when it gets demeaned or when it gets bullied down, that is as un-American a thing as I can think of. And so I think just the opposite is true here when it comes to the vice president. When he says it's winning, he's absolutely wrong.
Well, is this the winning that Donald Trump promised we would get tired of?
I don't know. Well, the whole winning, isn't that what was the
Charlie
actor?
Sheen.
Yeah, are we going to see Tiger Blood in the next tweet or something? Or it's sort of an odd thing, I guess. And I John certainly articulated very nicely the point, I guess, the way I feel as well, as something of a First Amendment absolutist. The irony here, it seems to me, is this issue, there's only a limited amount of energy in every protest, and we live in a world of sort of flavor, move on to the next thing. This was already, and I've heard some people on ESPN and other athletes talk about this, had already dissipated. There probably was not, it had sort of run its course, the protest. I don't think we would have seen probably a lot of kneeling. But what this ensures is it rekindles the fight. So it almost reminds me of, every so often there's the big groundswell, we better protect the flag from flag burners and others. Usually in response to nothing. I mean, it's not as if we're out there with some outbreak where on every street corner you're going to find somebody burning a flag. But then I'll use the phrase again, you gin up sort of the base and you get people excited. So it almost as if there would have been a sadness, it seems to me, if the issue had gone away. So this was a way to keep it going.
It does bring it up again.
But we we need to be opposed to racism. We need to find places where we can protest social justice issues. The question and the issue raised for the show is the NFL making this decision, assuming they follow through with it. They have a private business enterprise. They've heard from a lot of people. They think now this is really something where everyone seems to think that this is where the American culture is. We want to stand for the national anthem. And I think it's had an impact on them from a business standpoint. And I also think that there's an opportunity for us to find other places for us to talk, and for the NFL to make good on bringing a environment of equality and racial equality and opportunity inside their enterprise. This is a question about protesting for things happening outside their enterprise.
They might check with their players if that's what they want.
And they have.
They did it completely without consultation with their players.
And that's going to backfire.
They did it as a result of pressure from Trump.
Well, you say that. They did it. You think they ignored it completely. I doubt that they ignored it.
They didn't talk to the players' union. They didn't talk to any of the
players' union.
They didn't talk to any of the players.
How do you know that?
They said that. It's been reported that that's the case.
The NFL said they did not talk to any of the players.
It's been reported that way, John.
Moving on, a pro-Affordable Care Act group has set its sight on Indiana as it prepares to roll out a media blitz defending the health care law.
Protect Our Care is a nonprofit advocacy organization funded in part by labor groups. Its campaign to protect and bolster the Affordable Care Act has so far focused on moderate Republicans. But it's now turning to the Hoosier state to defend Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly, who's in a tough re-election fight. Donnelly has been a staunch supporter of the ACA during his time in Congress, even in Indiana, where the health care law often hasn't been popular with voters. Protect Our Care also released results of a poll that says 61% of Hoosiers favor tweaking the law versus less than 30% who want it repealed.
John Ketzberger, can this group and Joe Donnelly turn the tide of public opinion in Indiana in favor of Obamacare?
Oh, I don't know that they can turn it in favor completely, but look, the statistics that you quoted and other opinion polls have showed that it's not as unpopular among the general population as it's portrayed to be by people who are against it, and certainly in Congress. I mean, Congress is split as well. It's not the hard and fast issue that it seems to be on the campaign trail. Joe Donnelly has a challenge because of the way the campaigns are run, and he'll have to work very hard to try to get a majority of people because this will be a key issue, I think, when it comes down to people in November making a selection for the U.S. Senate. And he will have to convince a lot of the people who are in the middle that Obamacare is not the boogeyman that it is portrayed to be, and that it could be fixed. Whether he'll be successful is completely up to he and his campaign, and it will be difficult because of the opposition, which will be furious and well-funded.
Joe Donnelly has not been running away from his support of Obamacare. He never has. He maintains that it needs to be fixed, but he hasn't run away from his support or his votes, repeated votes for it. Is this going to be the issue more than any other that maybe this election turns on?
And I should point out, the only thing he ever really didn't like was the tax,
medical device tax
on medical devices, which would have hurt Warsaw, Indiana, and all of the Hoosier-based manufacturers. So getting back to what we said about honoring
picking
constituencies'
and choosing,
wishes. You know, this reminds me a little bit of when one of the late-night talk show hosts back a few years ago went out on the streets and said, what do you think of the Affordable Care Act? It's great. What do you think of Obamacare? Now, that's communism. You know, we can't have that. That's standing between me and my doctor. I think you're seeing many of the same. So it's really who can be most effective in advancing the argument. Because if you ask people, generally speaking, do you think there should be portability of coverage? Do you think that your kids who are not independent and emancipated should still be able to be on your policy up through college and into their early start of their careers? Yeah. Do you think there should be lifetime caps? Oh, no. Do you think there's... I mean, you go right down the line, pre-existing conditions, and everybody says the tenets, generally speaking, of the Affordable Care Act are things that they embrace. It's just the same kind of mindset. Well, it's Obamacare, so it must be bad. I don't know how, as a society, we get beyond... the labels we were just like Sleepy Joe, Mexican Joe, actually talk about substance.
Joe Donnelly has labeled health care as one of the issues that he will campaign on. Is that going to be his Achilles heel?
No, I don't think it'll be his Achilles heel. I do think that the numbers that I saw in the poll probably are about right, that most people probably want to tweak it, not necessarily repeal it. And I also think that had the act itself been enforced the way it had been designed early on in the Obama years, the Obama administration, things like all the exceptions and other things that were allowed in over time, all of a sudden it kind of fell apart because sort of the rest of the pool was getting burdened with more costs. I think if we had stuck to our guns early on, that might have had a chance to succeed, to be honest about it. Now, the question is, post-Obama, in this environment, you know, can it be tweaked and repaired? It's difficult. I think there is this bias towards... It's a political bias that says, oh, that's Obamacare, that's bad, but it's only bad because some of it didn't get effectuated. It didn't operate the way they had first designed it, and unfortunately they never enforced it.
Well, how big a job is it for Joe Donnelly to not let health care hurt him?
Oh, I think he can sell this message. I mean, the reason there are problems, there were always problems, and there's never been a piece of major legislation passed in this country that didn't need to be tweaked after the fact.
Right.
The Republicans not only refused to tweak it, they actually undermined it. They actually deliberately tried to undermine it when they couldn't repeal it. So I think you explain all of that. You explain these things that 400,000 Hoosiers are covered because of Obamacare. And in addition to that, almost every family with private health care has a benefit from it, whether it's the pre-existing condition or the lifetime cap or whatever. I mean, that's a selling point that didn't exist. I knew people that stayed in jobs they hated because they didn't have portability of health care. So there are things that you can sell and make people understand, and you can fix Obamacare when we get a Democratic Senate and House.
Right. It's hard for me to see how he rides to victory on this issue. I just don't think all by itself.
A national publication's political analyst had shifted the prospects of Indiana's second congressional district race, labeling it slightly less of a sure bet for the GOP.
The latest update from roll call political analyst Nathan Gonzalez shifted ratings for 19 U.S. House races this fall, all 19 of those shifts favoring Democrats. In Indiana, it's Congresswoman Jackie Walorski's second district seat that changed, moving from solid Republican to likely Republican, still a pretty good bet that Walorski will remain in the position. The three-term Hoosier Republican will face off this fall against Mel Hall, a minister and CEO who emerged from a six-candidate Democratic primary field.
Josh Wanis, is Jackie Walorski at risk in this particular election year?
After 2016, where I got every single prediction wrong, I'm switching my approach to saying there are no sure things in politics, and her re-election is among them. Anything could happen. I know I say this every week, but it's so true. Things happening so fast in Washington in terms of global stability and the threats that we face on a daily basis, in terms of the upheaval pick any number of issues, never mind the ongoing investigation into the conduct of people in and around the White House. Anything could happen. There are certain forces, as we've seen, you know, various times in our history, and in 74 in post-Watergate, where people who weren't supposed to get elected got elected, even if for only a term. So, nothing is out of the question. I've decided.
Go right out on a limb.
My short answer, because I know we're short on time, 59% Trump district. It's a very difficult thing for Mel Hall to overcome. I think we'll
And yet, this is a seat that Joe Donnelly had up until 2012, though that was the first year that new maps had shifted that district a little bit, new legislative maps. But this is one that Democrats have targeted in each successive election. Is this the one that finally breaks the dam?
I think if it is, then the Republicans are going to lose majority in the House, and they will suffer even more in Indiana if that's the case. I have a hard time seeing that, but I do think that if she sleeps on the race, there's no indication that she will.
Are you saying she's
sleepy?
Sleepy Jackie?
If she comes back to the district more, they're getting to know her, which could be her biggest problem.
Well, okay, and I'll leave that to you.
Yeah, she's well known.
She's going to campaign hard. It will be a contested election. I'll be surprised if she loses, and if she does, then it's a really good year for the Democrats and a really bad year for the Republicans.
Is it worth it for Democrats to spend much money in this, trying to take this seat?
I think Mel Hall is also in the position of being able to self-fund a lot
of
this,
true.
Too, which makes
That's
a big
true.
Difference.
Well, a group of Indiana convenience stores that advocates for the right to sell cold beer is offering customers a slightly different avenue to do so. They're so-called Chill Indiana bags.
Chill Indiana formed during last year's Sunday sales debate, advocating for major changes to the state's alcohol laws. Their latest gambit, the Chill Indiana Glacier bag, offered at certain convenience stores across the state.
Want cold beer? Then say goodbye to styrofoam coolers and bulky bags of ice. And thankfully, goodbye to overpriced scary liquor stores. Introducing a better option. The reusable Chill Indiana bag.
The group markets them as a way to fill up the bag with the warm beer they have to sell, then add ice from the soda machine to get the beer cold.
Ann Delaney, is this a clever shot across the bow from the convenience stores?
It's very clever, and I wish they would be quite as clever as protecting their employees from being shot while on the job there. And I think the government needs to get out of the liquor business. They're picking winners and losers in this.
It seems nothing new on one level, because when I was a younger man, I'd walk in, get a styrofoam cooler, get a bag of ice, throw it in there, buy the beer, put the beer in, go.
It's just like the same thing. Yeah.
Or putting the ice in the wine that I used to, when you're a nice dinner, put the ice
in the box.
You're more
in the box. Well,
is this more likely to just anger lawmakers, or
I think it's more likely to arouse the liquor stores and the opposition here, and you're going to see a bloody fist fight before long.
All right. Well, finally, it is the biggest weekend in Indiana, the greatest spectacle in racing, the 102nd running of the Indianapolis 500 this weekend. Panel, I'll start with you, John Hammond. Who have you got winning the race?
Winning the race, Ed Carpenter wanting to win the race, Danica Patrick.
I like that answer. Ann was very excited about her pick, so who do you got in?
I'm going to go with Joseph Greenway.
Oh. What?
Wow.
Huh?
That's better than Jeff Jordan.
Who's been coaching you?
That's what
John,
I'm going to do.
I'm going to go with the British singer. Rookie Robert Wickens.
Ooh.
John just Swan.
I really like John Hammond's answer. He covered all the bases. I would like to see Danica do well, but and Ed Carpenter is certainly somebody who's due.
You have to pick one.
Danica.
Okay.
Yeah,
she's prettier.
I don't have a rooting interest, so I root for the best story, and in my mind the best story is easily Danica Patrick, so that's my pick.
Always the journalist.
We also want to send our thoughts to everybody up in Noblesville. Hard to know what to say at this point. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican John Hammond, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR. Or, starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.